Good morning, Philadelphia, and everywhere else via the live stream. This is Kevin O'Brien. I'm with Wayne Middleton. Dan's working hard behind the glass. This is the SMB Acceleration Show. Before we get into today's show, remember, if you missed anything this morning on a radio broadcast or live stream, you can catch the podcast anywhere podcasts are found or on our website, smbacceleration.com. Today's show is going to be a focus again on blogging. We're going to dig a little bit deeper into creating images for your blog and also how to promote those blogs so that you get the best value for your money. Wayne, I got to ask, how was the trip down on this holiday Monday?
A little slippy at the Allentown end. We just had probably about 2 inches of snow. It was a little disappointing, to be honest. I was expecting a lot more. So, it was a good drive down. The usual brain surgeons on the road that have to get somewhere a little bit quicker than everyone else. But beyond that, it was fun. And then the classic happened. I get off of 476 and I'm just up onto the Schuylkill. And I get stuck behind the guy who does not want to go above the speed limit. In fact, he was going at least 10 miles below the speed limit. And,
excellent.
He was going so slow, I couldn't get past him. So I was just stuck there the whole journey. But it was fine. I mean, you know, I always drive safely anyway, so I appreciated it. He could have just put his foot on the gas just a little bit more.
Oh, is there a lot of traffic out there in general, though? Did it seem like any difference for the holiday?
Actually, yeah. I mean, surprisingly, not as busy as usual. Typically, I can expect to hit the Schuylkill, and it'd take about 20 to 25 minutes to get from...
Yeah.
The 476 exit down to City Ave, where the radio shows, where we broadcast from every Monday. But this morning was pretty clear.
Nice. I guess a lot of people are off for the holiday.
I guess so. Those lucky few, huh?
I was going to say, call me jealous.
Yeah. Well, my kids are probably doing the same as yours, going to watch a movie.
Oh, yeah.
We spent the weekend watching one and two of Harry Potter, because I just started getting into Harry Potter books. And so they've watched it 4 times now, and I'm sure they're going to put it on again.
Excellent. I have to say, you know what? I have never seen a Harry Potter.
Ah.
Any of them.
They're clever. They got some good effects, but, you know, it is what it is.
No, absolutely. My kids were watching Togo for the second or third time again this morning.
Yeah, my guys haven't watched that, so.
They now go around calling our dog Togo instead of his name Edison. So he now goes by Togo pretty much all the time.
They think
he should. They wanted to know over the weekend if he could pull them on their sleds. I was like, I don't think this is going to be.
Yeah,
we're going to need more snow in case when you fall off.
More snow and possibly a team of 10 huskies.
I was like, I don't think he wants. I think he likes the snow. I think he likes to be outside. He's not looking to.
Yeah,
mush.
Yeah, he doesn't want to mush anywhere.
Which I don't blame him. But, you know, it was a nice little bit of snow.
It was enough that it was fun and, not too much that it was a hassle. I didn't even have to break out the snowblower. I just hand shoveled this weekend.
Nice.
So, you know, it's good when it's that
have you had to break out the snowblower yet?
Only to look at it and make sure the batteries were working. So, we never bought a gas-powered one. We wanted to be somewhat kind to the environment, I guess. And so we ended up buying a battery one.
No way.
Which is actually surprisingly powerful.
As long as you
keep it charged and don't do what I did when we had the big snow last year where I went out and I was doing it for like 10 minutes and all of a sudden it just conked out.
Really?
So I literally had a really nice, amongst the 6 inches of snow we had, I had a nice one lane of great clearance and everything else was still chugged. And it took something like 4 or 5 hours to charge.
And as the snow's falling more, you're like, come on.
It's just getting deeper. So in the end, it gets to a point where it's either going to be too deep that you can't use it or, you know, you just try to do what I did, which is it's got 2 battery cells. You put 1 battery cell on to charge, 1 in it. You go as long as that battery lasts and keep switching it over. It's a very powerful machine. I'm glad we have it. But I must admit, just filling up the gas and going is a little easier.
Yeah, combustion engines make it.
They do make it easier.
But you got to be kind to the environment. You know, that actually kind of segues excellent into the small business news, and which actually caught my attention. It made me laugh. There's nothing better than people taking advantage of, I guess, being aesthetically pleasing. You know.
Yeah, I mean.
In some ways, like the lady raising money for Australia.
Yeah, yeah.
So, But I mean, apparently this guy has a legitimate business, and he goes by the Hot Milk Man in North Jersey and New York City. And it's kind of genius, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, we're all a little bit inclined to appreciate the finer things in life. And so he's just taking full advantage of it. He delivers his goods, but yeah, he's doing it all on his own. It's actually featured in The Guardian, right?
Yeah, it is in The Guardian. Yeah, absolutely.
Really interesting little story. It's worth looking at. And it just goes to show you business ideas can come from anywhere. And I think this one is actually pretty genius.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, you know, the interesting thing was that the article highlighted, you know, even more than like him, it highlighted how much effort he had to put into making the business work, regardless of like how you look.
Yeah, it doesn't, it's not easy.
No.
I think that's, yeah, you know, as I said, it's a good story. It's got a great little background to it. And if you are thinking about starting a small business, not necessarily for a hot milkman, but for some other enterprise, it's worth reading because he does go into detail about, you know, the challenges he's faced and how, and it gives you a really good indication as to how difficult it is really to
start. I was
going to
say, it sounds like the guy works pretty darn hard.
He does, yeah.
Humping all that milk cannot be easy.
It cannot, no. I mean, I remember growing up and seeing milkmen turn up at Aldor, and they were not necessarily aesthetically pleasing. But it was hard work. They were up at the crack of dawn or just before, and they're out there bringing their wares to the door. And you know,
yeah. I'll tell you, you know, I was having a similar conversation. I was actually talking to my wife about this article, like jokingly, and I said, you know what? On the flip side, as much as I like it, I feel like too many people will condemn the Instagram models of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think people fail, and myself at times, fail to realize how much effort actually goes into that. I mean, that's like probably a 60, 70, 80-hour a week job.
Yeah.
Being someone who curates an Instagram feed for their personal brand.
Yeah, I mean, building your personal brand and then maintaining it.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard, hard work. I mean, I think about mine. You know, we've talked about my little side project where I do my Instagramming about bass fishing or fishing in general. And I will tell you, it can really consume a lot of your time. It takes a lot of dedication to keep those posts going frequently. And it's a lot harder than people think to maintain a brand of any kind, especially when it comes down to your personal brand.
It really, no, it is. And interestingly, my wife was talking to a friend who has built an Instagram brand, actually in the Lehigh Valley.
Okay, yeah.
And it's all around food. I think it's Lehigh Valley Food for Thought. If I'm wrong, somebody will correct me. But it's basically, you know, and she was explaining to my wife how she might have to take 60 pictures to get one, and then you have to put it through photo, you know, enhance it or edit it or crop it, you know. And all of a sudden, it becomes like you just said, even for trying to grow a small personal brand, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's almost like a full-time job in itself.
It doesn't pay well to start.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I mean, you know, I think it's great that people are out there creating content, and it's always good to see content being produced, especially good content. Just understand that it does take time. So when these people are really invested in trying to grow their personal brand, become a food writer or a food photographer, they take time. And you know, the irony is you can do a lot of it really with your cell phone, and I know we may touch on a couple of things later on which may help you when you're putting together your personal brands or thinking about doing Instagram marketing for your small business, but it's time consuming.
I mean, honestly, there is no simple business.
No,
you know, people too often, I feel, are sold these false bill of goods from people like, just open a Shopify store and you know what? You'll be a t-shirt millionaire, or just, you know, become an Instagram person, you know, Instagram influencer, and you can make this, or a YouTube influencer. And, you know, it's important to realize how much effort it's going to take. It's starting your own business, basically. But, you know, that's the only way to look at it.
I think there's a guy that I followed for years, and it's called Brad Hussey.
Okay.
He's a freelance web designer, marketer generally, and he's built he's been doing this for a number of years at this point. But one of the things that's always stuck in my head when I'm thinking about trying to grow my own marketing business or design or whatever it is it really, it takes everything you've got and more to really make it work. And nothing comes easy.
No.
And you know, you can be sold a bill of goods about these Shopify stores or other small business kind of ideas that are out there. And it's, you know, there's no quick way to making a business work or succeed and being successful with it. So, you know, dedication, hard work, being up all sorts of hours. I know you know how that feels. Working sometimes throughout the night. This is what it takes to run and start to build your business. And eventually, you know, if you're good at it and things start to take off, it becomes easier. But it's all, you've always got that nagging doubt over your head about this or about that. So it's a brave person that takes on growing a small business. And I think it's worth taking a second and just appreciating all those people that do it, because it is incredibly difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, even if those folks that are doing it, especially, you know, because they have a full-time job and have that secondary, you know, passion that they're trying to build, you know, it's a day like today. Say you're off, all of a sudden you're not off because you're putting time into this secondary, you know, business that you're looking to grow.
And yeah, it's, you know, it consumes everything.
It does. Yeah, like, it does. You're right. But you know,
but
it always...
The rewards are worth it, I think. You get that, you know, you think about the pros and cons of everything. The rewards can be really, really worthwhile in terms of getting that life balance that we're all searching for. And I think everyone's looking for that. Having that extra income always helps, especially when you've got a small family that you're thinking about the future for. So, you know, with hard work comes high rewards. It's worth, you know, it isn't, I would never say don't try it. It's definitely worth trying at least once in your
Absolutely.
Life, I think.
Yes. And then, you know what, it always makes you think of that Mark Cuban quote where he said, you know, it doesn't matter how many times you fail, you only have to be right once and then tell everyone you're an overnight success.
Yeah.
You know, and he was kind of like, kind of going off the cuff to people who'd asked him, like, well, you know, people say that you're like an overnight success. And he was like, you know, people don't realize how hard I work. You know, he owned a bar and owned small businesses that he failed at before, you know, selling broadcast.com or even what was that Micro Solutions or whatever previous to that. But like, he failed a number of times, right? And people think of him as an overnight success. They don't realize how many nights, weekends, days, like
years.
He didn't sleep, years.
Exactly. And yeah, I mean, it's true. And it actually leads into, you know, some of the concerns that you have as a small business, you know, is when you start creating jobs, opportunities for people, and then you've got their livelihoods to think about. And there was actually a really good article that you pointed out on the usnews.com about the 2020 is expecting to bring higher labor costs.
Absolutely.
For small businesses. So, you know, it's really, there's a lot of hurdles out, a lot of potential obstacles to try to overcome. And this is just another one in the many long list of different things that you're going to face as a small business.
Yeah, I think hiring, you know, is absolutely one of the most difficult things people go through, you know.
Yeah, hiring and knowing who to hire, why you, when to hire them, when to kind of slow down on your hiring, and it, you know, to caveat that is one of the hardest things I've ever had to do is unfortunately let people go.
Yeah,
because you do, regardless of how good a business person you are, you start to build relationships with people, and when it's in a small environment, like a small business, they become extensions of your family because, I mean, you see them more than your family nine times out of ten.
Absolutely.
And so when you have to make that call where, you know, sorry, it's you know, I can no longer keep you, it's really tough.
It is not, yeah, no. Having owned, like, the restaurants and all, we had to go through it. And you know what? It never gets easier. Every time you're like, ah. This is brutal. I mean, unless you're a terrible employee, honestly, then I'm like, all right, if you got to go, you got to, yeah.
Yeah, if you're not, if they, I always reminded my father-in-law to tell me a story. He had difficulty, he ran a team, but he had some challenges with some of his staff members. One of them kept falling asleep at his desk, but he was the hardest one to get rid of. And I was like, why? You've got perfect...
Yeah.
Grounds for it. He's not putting his weight, he's not putting the work in, and he's falling asleep at his desk. He said, yeah, but, you know, the question then comes back to you as the manager is why are you not motivating him? And I was like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. So it's very interesting. And you know, when you let those people go, some are very easy, some are just not.
Oh, some you're like, I hope they don't come back in here later.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, you know what?
The other kind of thing was kind of interesting that we read this weekend was about business and social media.
Yeah.
It was, you know, there's certainly no question that social media is huge is huge for small businesses and growing your networks, trying to build communities, and to another extent, growing your brand. And it was just some interesting data points that came out of the article, I think. So 2018, there was a report done by SCORE that more than three quarters or 77% of small businesses use social media to support their core processes, including marketing, customer service, and sales.
Yeah.
So it shows you how diverse social media can be, right? So we've talked a lot ad nauseum to some level about social media and what it can do. But you start thinking about it as a customer services platform, you know, and you can start, you know, using Twitter to respond. I'm always reminded of that famous Comcast story where single employee at Comcast, their Twitter account was blown up with some complaints, and he took it upon himself to respond. And now that's literally created Comcast kind of customer service. They now have a team of people dedicated to Twitter to respond to negative cut quotes and try to help people find a solution to their issues. But it all started with one guy just taking that little extra initiative on Twitter to respond to someone.
So I think it's a great medium. I think that Twitter's an excellent medium for responding to people.
I think it is because, you know, I mean, I've done it myself. You buy a product and it goes faulty. And what you do is you put a picture of the product out there and say, yeah, I was really looking forward to getting this. And then it didn't work the way I wanted it to. And, you know, what surprises me is what surprised me at the time is that I didn't get a response from the company who made the product. I'm not going to mention any names. I didn't get a response. But what I did get a response from was the company who sold it to me, which was Amazon.
Okay.
Amazon responded. Not only did they comfort me about the problem with the product, they also said, "Would you like us to send you a new one, or is there an alternative product that you would like to consider?" So I said, "Oh, you know, let's try a new one and send it through. Maybe it was just faulty at the time," and they sent me it through free of charge.
So how did Amazon respond via email or via
Twitter?
No way.
Yeah.
So you tagged Amazon in addition to the product manufacturer.
Yep. And I got a response within 24 hours.
Really?
Which was amazing. So it did. It went that extra level to making me feel more comfortable, not necessarily with the manufacturer of the brand, but definitely with Amazon. So therefore, you know, Amazon, kudos. You did a great job. I didn't come away feeling that I'd been ripped off in any way, shape, or form and got the product. And ironically, when the product arrived after being replaced, it was a faulty product.
No kidding.
Which made me feel much better about getting it.
But the original purchase.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I think we often underestimate that everything Amazon does is about the customer. And that's really, you know, I once heard Warren Buffett say, the person he would least like to go against in business right now would be Jeff Bezos. And his rationale was he took something that was so mundane for most of us and he completely re-engineered the experience and now it's enjoyable. He was like buying groceries or, you know, going to the convenience store, or not convenience store, but like, you know, the retails, like, you know,
going
Walmart
to the mall, for
the,
instance,
yeah, exactly,
and then
the
trying
mall.
To go to, yeah, a Walmart, or you're going to go to Target or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it did. It changed. Changed the way we shop. There's no doubt about it. I would also say what it has also done for those big box stores, it's made them up their game.
Oh, absolutely.
He hugely.
Yes.
So, you know, now, and we talked about this, I think it was last week or the week before, where we was talking about creating an in-store experience.
Yeah.
So, you know, even Walmart did it, having the greeter at the front door. Even having a little touch like that where someone at the door welcoming you into the store, asking if you need any help finding anything. This is all lessons they've learned from the e-commerce business that is Amazon. And so it's really interesting just how not only the influence that Amazon had on everything, or Bezos, sorry,
yeah.
had on everything, but also how, you know, box stores have reacted to it. And not only is their online presence much, much better, they've got to compete on the delivery of these products, the shipping and everything else. But also the in-store experience is so much more improved than what it used to be.
Yes, it is. It really, you know, even the picking up of, you know, the your online orders from location has become easier. And they now have the lockers and all as like a response yep. to Amazon, because people want that frictionless customer experience.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I noticed in my local Target, we've got online shoppers parking spots now. So basically, you don't even have to get out of the car. The people in Target, if your order's there, you let them know you're coming. They will bring out what you ordered to your car, put it in your car, and off you go.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty crazy. Wegmans does the same. I think Wegmans does a similar sort of thing.
I've always wanted to do the grocery shopping online. I never have.
We did it. I think we did it once when I lived back in the UK. It's been in the UK for a while.
Okay.
And I can't remember which store it was. But we ordered it, and because there wasn't something that we had on our list, they replaced it with something else.
Okay.
And I must admit, it was the replacing it with something else that I didn't like, because that's not what we wanted.
Yeah.
So I would have rather them say, hey, this was not available, but yeah. as soon as it is, we'll send it out to you. That would have been better than getting the experience of having something that was like, that's not what we really wanted, and it's not really part of the meal structure we was going to build in or whatever. That would have made the experience better. And I think it has moved along since those days.
That would make sense.
But that one-time experience has put us off doing it.
I can understand,
almost forever at this point.
Yeah, you're like, I don't know about that it's like, grocery delivery, right?
I mean, getting back to the social media, another interesting data point that came out of this same report, and you can check out the report on azbigmedia.com. The report found that 69% of adults in the US use at least one social media network. That's a huge
number.
At least one. So, you know, I myself use multiple. I know you use multiple. So it gives you a real idea. If you're trying to find your audience and reach them, you could do worse than trying through social media. And if you're not doing social media right now, where have you been? Get on it now and start thinking about a decent strategy to work it.
I thought the interesting thing, just in like, though it's not an apples to apples comparison, is seems more businesses have social media than have websites. Because that other research said, 46% of businesses have a website or?
Yeah, it was a low. It was actually quite a low number. Yeah. Surprisingly low. Yeah, and it even that kind of raises questions, which is, if you don't have a business, if you have a business but don't have a website, how are you converting them? How are you getting new customers? How are you converting customers? Is it just through your social media channels? Are you leveraging form extensions on there or something? It just opens up a whole new kind of approach to marketing, I think, and building your small business.
Oh, it sure does, right? I mean, the options out there, it goes to show you there's a lot of businesses that are running without finding value and trying to run without a website, but just via social media.
And the reason why most people run without a website.
What do you think?
What do you think?
I think it's the difficulty in starting it.
I think it's difficulty in starting it, but I would say it's cost.
Really?
That's what I think. I think there is a... For many years, websites have been sold at quite high numbers. Me and you were discussing this just before the show. But websites, you know, if you go to a company who claim to build websites, there's a number of them out there, and you say, okay, I need a website, needs to do this. And then all of a sudden you get, almost like $100,000 figure on the end of it. I'm not going to pay for that.
Or even $20,000.
Even $20,000 feels too much. I mean, realistically, and we've talked about this in earlier shows, if you get onto a Wix or you get onto a Squarespace or something like that, you can actually build a website yourself very easily. It may not be the all singing, all dancing, but it's enough of a presence to have a store.
Better than nothing.
And it's cheaper, right? So you could probably do that for $200, $300, maybe $400 at the top. If you want something a little bit more advanced than that and you're trying to do some lead generation or things like that, you may want a couple of thousand.
So,
I mean, time, money, and then fear of not knowing how to do it.
I was going to say, and I think for a lot of people, it's also, what I often hear is they don't know what to write to start the first. Like, you know, it's one of those things, you know, they say about like being an author, you just have to start writing every day.
Yeah, same as blogs. Yeah. And this is why we, like last week, we talked about blogs quite a bit, and we're getting into more detail this week. The fear of building content. I'm not a writer, and I said this last week. I'll stake a claim on it every day. I am not a writer, but you don't always need to write. What you can do is, with a simple website, is explain your services. I mean, if you don't know what you're selling, there's a bigger problem at hand. But like listing out your services, the times you're open, and where you can be found. That's minimally all you would need to do for your website. You don't need this about us and mission statement and everything else if you're not comfortable doing it. What you can do is work with someone over time to build that, who has more experience with writing. Yeah. That's another way of doing it. So,
or you know, take anything you have. If you have partners that you know have PDFs or, you know, one pagers, just
flyers,
recycle anything you've ever made and make it into your initial website, and then just, you know, kind of take that little bit of task of it every day of improving. Maybe write 3 sentences, 4 sentences, you know, add an image. But
the more you write, the better you get.
Yeah, it's true. It's a tough thing, but, you know, that can definitely be done. And as you and I definitely think, there's a lot of value. There's obviously a lot of value in creating a website, because there's a lot of businesses who obviously don't have it that are missing out on the whole organic side of traffic.
Yeah, not only that, I mean, they're limiting to some level the amount of time their stores or their services are able to be accessed.
Yeah.
A website is your shop front. It's
all
open
the time.
24/7, 365. You know, that's the most important thing about it, is constantly there when you cannot always be there. So, I mean, it just basically that. If you're not online 24/7, 365 nowadays, you're probably not going to be considered very often.
No, and I agree. I think that, you know what, it makes me think of one of the, I can't remember who it was, somebody had invested in one of the casinos in Atlantic City once said, you know what, you know why I invested in it? It's open 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. You know, they're always kind of have the opportunity to be making money. And if you have a small business website, you have that opportunity.
Yeah.
Like, I might be searching for your product. I might work over, you know, third shift, second shift, and be searching for your product at not normal times. I can put through a contact form and then start that conversation on a time that's good for me without me trying to have to schedule a call when I might not be available.
Yeah, and I would say if cost of a website is holding you back, why not consider how much one customer would be?
Yes.
How much revenue would you make off of that one customer coming in through a website versus putting all these leaflets out there that may or may not produce a customer at the end of it? Website isn't guaranteed to drive customers, but you have more of an opportunity to get them, and they're not instantly thrown into the trash like a lot of your direct mail or your promos that you leave around. So, you know, again, your website can be a massive tool to your business. And if you haven't got one, I'd be really interested to hear from people that don't have one, just so we can hear how else you're leveraging maybe technology or something else to help promote and build your business. But
Send us an email, info@smbacceleration.com, if you run a business without a website. We love to talk to you, even bring you on the air, and kind of talk through how you are generating business.
Yeah, and then we can even help kind of allay some of those fears about what a website is and how much it will be.
Absolutely. So we're going to take a quick break. And before we do, just remember, if you miss anything this morning, the radio broadcast or live stream, you can catch the podcast on our website, smbacceleration.com, or anywhere podcasts are found. And when we come back, we're going to talk small business blogging.
Welcome to 2020. It's time to give your small business a good makeover. Why not look at a new website? Why not look at your brand and see how you're performing online? Or are you trying to grow your social media channels? SMB Acceleration Radio Show can have the answers for you. Join us as a guest or be sponsoring the show. We can help no matter what the problem. Call 855-308-3825.
If you're a real estate investor looking to buy or sell off-market properties in 2020, then check out We Buy Real Estate, Inc. We Buy Real Estate, Inc. is a real estate company focused on buying and selling off-market commercial, industrial, and residential properties. Investors, stop paying retail for your real estate. From investor-friendly real estate services to helping locate off-market real estate deals. We Buy Real Estate, Inc. is your Philadelphia area real estate company. For more information on their services, visit their website, WeBuyRealEstateInc.com, or give them a call at 215-987-4561. Investors, if you just want to see the inventory of off-market deals, send them an email, info@WeBuyRealEstateInc.com.
Want to promote your business or sponsor a show? Give us a call at 855-308-5825. And be sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Google, Stitcher, and all your favorite podcast platforms.
All right, we're back. And we're about to get into a topic that I personally often struggle with. And I think it's extremely valuable because, as they say, you know, a picture is worth a thousand words. And as Wendy Sossman brought up a couple weeks ago, you know, video can convey a lot of words. But I think you need those blog images and social media images to really convey your brand. And, you know, one good image might be worth 10,000 words.
It could. You could summarize your entire blog article, business, whatever it is, in one picture.
Yep.
Which is pretty powerful. And so, I mean, we're here today and we're going to talk about some of these things. And, you know, I'm traditionally a graphic designer, so I more than anyone else know how to leverage images and what makes a good image and what doesn't. And there are a bunch of tools out there nowadays that can help you create great visuals. And you just got to have a bit of an eye. You got to know what you're looking for and what may or may not resonate. And I know, like, leading into this, some of the things we're going to get into is, okay, what makes a good image? Should I or should I not use text in my social media posts or in my LinkedIn profile or whatever? You know, how do I differentiate myself? There's a lot of free stock images out there, but they all start to look very similar, and you don't necessarily always want to have an image on your associated to your brand that may be somewhere else in the atmosphere, you know,
yeah,
a different
absolutely.
Brand. So how do you differentiate it, and how do you select a picture that's kind of unique to you? My first instinct, honestly, is always to try to get your own photography if you can.
Okay.
Make, you know, do it yourself to some level, or get a photographer to, especially if you're doing business promotions. Nothing better than showing your store, whatever it is, whether it's a product or a service or a store, and whatever the business type application is, it's always good to get a shot that you own, because then no one else can have that, and that's unique to you.
Do you think you could take those shots with today's cell phones?
You can for certain applications. I wouldn't necessarily say you can use them in print. They're not going to be high enough resolution for that, but for web applications,
that's what I was thinking.
Social media posts, yeah, absolutely. You can use your phone. You just got to understand what makes a good photo, or how to frame a good photo.
Well, that's tricky, because I don't know if we have ever mentioned, supposedly, according to my wife, take absolutely the worst photos ever.
I've seen them. I can concur. no, I'm kidding. It's very easily I could show you in, and I'm going to talk it rather than show people on the show, but there's a rule of thirds, right? So what you do is you break up your screen into thirds. There's actually, if you go into the preferences on most phones, there's a grid that actually breaks it up for you.
Okay.
Whatever your focal point is, so if I was taking a picture of Kevin at the microphone right now, he would be in my left-hand third to show the studio space as well as Kevin. I don't want him to be center focus, because then it's a bit weird. If I put him off to the side, he's going to make a nicer shot. Where the magic happens is really in the editing after that. It's like how you soften the light, how you do, you know, how you change the tone of the image and things like that. But to get a good shot, think about your thirds. If you want room for typography, create room with typography. So I would take a picture of Kevin right now, and I would have the rest of the studio space open to the right-hand side. That creates my opportunity to use text. If I wanted him to be more of the main focal point of the entire frame, he would be more centered. He wouldn't be true center, because that just has a really weird balance. Mm-hmm. I'd have him just slightly either left or right of center.
Here, you know what? I'm going to make way demonstrate for the live stream. And then so, we'll put it up on the website later so everyone can see what he's talking about. Because I would have put you right in the middle.
So here's...
I would have had you dead center.
Yeah. Yeah. See, this is... so here... You can't see this. I'm going to put him in the left-hand side.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to do one where he's just slightly off-center. And then I'm going to do one that where he's sitting to the far right. And you'll be able to look just at that. Same. He's in the same position, three different poses. But each one has a slightly different feel to it. Even down to the elevation, if I'm looking down on him, you never want to do an up nostril shot because that's always, you know, that's fairly
obvious.
I think
that's one of my terrible, my wife was like, why are you always bending, kneeling down when you're taking pictures? You're doing it. And I'm like, well, I don't know. But I think, personally, I think I take good pictures of trees and nature, but...
Well, that's where the downward focus would work. So if you're into doing, if you're doing landscape shooting, it's a very different animal, and it all depends on the subject that you're trying to shoot. So, you know, I do a lot of fishing photography, and some of it is not so much like the guy holding the fish, although, you know, I've done this myself, people. If you catch a small one, but you want to make out it's bigger than it is, just move it closer to the lens. It's easy. It looks huge, but you know, to a trained eye, I can see the difference. But if you're taking photos of an office space, having that downward angle looking up makes it feel bigger. It opens up the space and shows – it gives you more to look at. So it creates this illusion of having more space around you and that your office is probably bigger than what it is, which is why in real estate they always choose the top angle or the bottom angle to look out over.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
subject matter. So if you're shooting a product or something like that, you don't really want – unless you're doing lifestyle photography where you're setting up a scene and your product's part of that scene, obviously whatever's in the scene can't be more prominent than your product. So you always want to make sure that's front and center in a prominent position, and everything else you can subdue back a little bit by adjusting your focus. So with a subject matter of Kevin, and I don't want to go upwards because I'm going to get a lot of nostril. I want to kind of have him face on or slightly elevated, almost like a selfie shot. Where he's fit, looking natural, but it's coming at an angle that people can rely on. It's where his eyes are focused and how he's looking at me. That would be the interesting point. I could do a whole show just on photography because there's so much involved.
Oh, but no, there
good
is.
Basics of thirds, rule of thirds.
So yeah. I guess really the thing is, especially if you're going to be using your either cell phone or like a DSLR, is take a lot of pictures.
Yeah, normally, and to give you an idea, we did a photo shoot recently for a client of ours. I was art directing, and we had a photographer do it. And I think she took over 600 photos.
Wow.
And out of those 600 photos, we're probably only going to use 10.
Wow.
The reason you do that is because you have a variety of different shots and slightly adjusted angles and slightly different focuses. And really what you want to do is out of all those is cull it down and you slowly start to get to the selective view. You never throw the rest of those images away because you can use them in other applications. But for the ones that you want on your website or, you know, you're going to use through social media, you select the best of what you got. So the more images you take, the better it is.
Yeah.
I've yet to find a photographer that gets one shot and it's done. You know, I would, if someone did that to me, I'd be like, no, you're going to be taking more photos now because that's not the shot.
And yeah.
You know, I want to see a variety.
Yeah, because you never know what you're going to get, especially because it's basically free. Yeah, shots exactly. cost no money.
Exactly. So, yeah, it doesn't – you're paying for that person's time. You're not paying for how many photos they take. So you want as many photos you can possibly get.
Actually, it depends on the discipline of the photographer. Because in today's time, everything's digital. So you can rip off 500 pictures and only need
it's true.
Two.
Yeah.
If you go back to the days of just 35 millimeter and you had to pay for it to be developed,
that's
you
true.
Can bet you were only get maybe one or two good shots.
All right, fair enough. If you're self-developing, you limit. Thanks, Dan. If you limit your – if someone is doing it the old-fashioned way with film, which – hey, I can still produce film now. I still know the whole procedure. But most photographers nowadays are digital based. So, but if they were, that would always limit the cost and the amount of shots you do. With digital, you're almost unlimited and you're only paying for that person's time. So make sure you get enough shots. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's a perfect kind of way is, well, all right, I'm going to use, say, 50 of my 600 because I tend to be cheap and I'm going to use a lot of it. Mm-hmm. Maybe not the, so What is the next step? Like, I think a lot of people struggle here. They feel like they take good pictures. You know, it's almost even like the Instagram filters. Now, you know, they make everybody feel better. But if you're a small business, how do you go about improving the images you're taking? What if you're really, say you're really a, you know, disciplined small business owner, and every day you're taking a picture of something in the town, whether it's whatever it is, you know, it's a local business, you're following our blog and tips, and you're like, I'm out there creating all this content now. How do I make my images better? And I think that's a tough thing for a lot of people.
Yeah, and again, with the Instagram filters, I tend not to use them, honestly.
Yeah, they're overused.
They're overused. Yeah. All they're really doing is doing slight color adjustments. So you can, there's a number of different apps out there that you can use to do it. Snapseed is one, which is a free one. That's a Google-powered.
Okay.
And it gives you a lot more control. You can control the temperature of the shot. So basically what that does is add a blue or a reddish filter. It creates cold or warm. You can adjust the color balance. You can adjust the brightness. You know, you can see these highly stylized, which they call HDR images, which adds this kind of grain to it. So it doesn't feel like a real shot. So minimally, what I would look to do is improve the sharpness, adjust the brightness a little bit, and then just think about, Do I want to carry across this slightly warmer feel? So I start to add a little bit of a yellow or a red filter to it, so it becomes warmer. But honestly, the best thing to do is crispness. There's a bunch out there. As I said, Snapseed is one, and I use that myself, and I really enjoy that one.
Okay.
There's Adobe Photoshop Fix. There's Lightroom, which is also another Adobe product.
Is Lightroom mobile, or is it?
It is. Yeah.
Okay.
And with Lightroom, really, what you want to do is take your photographs through Lightroom.
What is that? What do you mean by that?
So you can turn on your camera, and Apple has its own little app that enables you to take the photo. Well, with Adobe Lightroom, you can actually take the photo within Lightroom, which gives you a lot more control over the settings of that photo. So you can adjust your brightness, your contrast, your tone. You can tweak it so that you can change the focal point. So if the focal point on a face is the eye and you want that to be the strongest part of it and the crispest part of it, you can almost diffuse the rest of the shot so it focuses on
like
that
one. Like portrait mode on the Apple.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's a bit more for your more advanced user, I would say. But a minimum, crispness, make sure it's nice and sharp. Make sure you kind of warm it up a little bit here and there and increase or decrease the brightness and contrast. That way you'll get richer colors. You'll be able to adjust the kind of saturation of the image as well. And then ultimately make a stronger, more visually appealing image.
Okay, so walk me through, because since you were mentioning your fishing Instagram.
Yes.
So you were out enjoying the rest of the holiday after the show and were able to go fishing. Maybe it's ice fishing, whatever it is. And today.
Today it would be ice fishing, folks.
And walk me through, you just caught, you know, something that photo worthy. What's your process? Are you going to use Snapseed or are you using Adobe? What's your process right now for getting that image and then getting it up on or enhancing the image and getting it up on social media?
So the way I would do today, and I've done this a few times, is I want to tell a visual story.
Okay.
I'm useless at words, so I want to make a visual story. So first off, I would take some shots of where I'm fishing.
Okay.
And maybe it's close-ups of the rocks or the water or something. Something really picturesque that I'm focusing on. When I catch that fish, it's really hard to hold a camera, hold a fish, and try to take a shot of yourself with the fish. If you have someone with you, have them do it. If you don't, then take yourself out of the equation and just focus on the fish. At the end of the day, the people on my Instagram are not there to see my ugly mug. Yeah. They want to see what I've caught. So what I try to do is I'm not always handling the fish. I will put it in the net. I will set up just a very quick little setup. I'll have my fishing rod to one side. I'll have the fish in the net, and I'll take a couple of shots at different angles just to get different perspectives of what the fish looks like. Then I will nine times out of 10, I will show a release shot, which is the only time where I really hold a fish to support it.
Okay.
So I'll have my hand in the water, the fish will be sitting on top, and I'll take a shot as it goes away.
Okay.
And it just creates this visual story that I put together. I will then go in after I've been fishing, because I never do it on the bank. It'd take too long.
Yeah.
Afterwards, I will look at the shots that I took, and I'll take three or four of each of these.
Okay. So you have four of the location, four of the fish in some form of like captured state,
yep.
And then four in a release state, four
exactly.
or five, you know, somewhere in
yeah,
there.
Somewhere okay. around there, some sort of logic to that.
Yeah.
I will then look at those images when I get home. I will pick what I feel are the best ones, and really that's it. That's just gut instinct, what looks best.
Yeah.
And then I'll look at it and assess, do I need to adjust it? Because sometimes you don't. Sometimes you just get the best, and it's you know, sometimes the light's just right, it feels right, and it looks good. So you don't need to always adjust things.
Mm-hmm.
And even, so looking at it, I'll figure out if I'm going to adjust it. Nine times out of 10, if I'm going to adjust anything, it's going to be the sharpness and the contrast.
Okay.
Nine times out of 10. I'll make some quick adjustments so it becomes richer, full of color. Pick the four best ones and then just do it as a sequence of shots. Post it up on Instagram.
Like a four sequence, one post?
Yep. I will, nine times out of 10, also put my logo on it somewhere.
Okay, so walk me through. Are you using Snapseed or Lightroom to?
Snapseed, Lightroom. Most of the time I use Snapseed.
Really?
Yeah, it's just easier and faster.
Okay.
And it really is very simple, folks. You load the image in, you adjust it with your thumb in terms of brightness, and you can see it. You take it to extreme, and you see how bad it is, and then you take it to the other extreme and see how bad it is there, and then you find somewhere in the middle that feels
medium,
right.
Okay.
So it's really quick. It's really easy. There's a bunch of good presets on it too. So you, unlike the Instagram ones, which are okay, there's a bunch of presets that you can do that, and there's over 50 of them in Snapseed, I think. And those presets are set up to do exactly what we're talking about. Adjust the tone, the contrast, the sharpness of the image.
Mm-hmm.
Add some warmth or depth or whatever. So you can actually just flick through the presets if you want to. If you want to get into more of the kind of stylizing stuff, then you play around with the additional filters. So there's a lot of trial and error to start with. Now, the interesting thing is when you find something that works, you can save it as a preset. So when I next go fishing and do kind of a similar sequence, I can try my filter that I created first time and see if that works.
Yeah.
That helps in so many ways. It helps a consistent look and feel to your photography that you're going to use for your Instagram posts mm-hmm. or your Facebook or whatever. And that consistency of shot is really important. If your shots all kind of look and have that same feel to them, not necessarily the same topic or the same subject, but the same feel, they look cohesive.
It's almost like your social media feed becomes like a magazine. Almost.
Exactly. So then you work on it from there. And actually, it's funny you bring up magazines. If you want to look at good photography, magazines spend millions of dollars on getting photographers to do the shoots.
Yeah.
And if you look at them, the light, everything else, they adjust it similar to what I'm saying to do here for your social posts. But if you look at it, you can actually start to see the thirds grid come into play. All photographers use it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just understand that one shot they got in that magazine was part of a thousand photo shoot, you know.
Yeah, all day.
So all
it took
day,
multiple
24
days.
Hours. Yeah. So it really is. It's just a matter of looking. It could be just the right look, the right kind of focal point that you're trying to achieve.
No, that's a great point. And how about getting a logo on? How do you go about that? Because it seems like that would give people a struggle.
Yeah, the logo can be a struggle because, again, it all depends on what you're going to use in terms of your app. And I'm just getting my phone up so I can actually remember the name of the software that I use. The one that I use most is called Adobe Photoshop Mix.
Okay.
So it enables you to access your images on your phone.
Okay.
So you access them, you select the one you want, and then you can create layers. And this is the key. If I want to put a logo on an image, I'll add it to a layer.
Oh, okay.
And then within Elements itself, you can choose to cut out the background of it. So if you take your logo and you put it in, it will come in with a white background or a black background. You want to take it out of that background, right?
Yeah.
So very easily, you can just trace around trace around the negative space around that logo. It will cut it out. And then you're left with a logo sitting on top of an image. So then what you can do is add shadows and stuff like that, so it lifts it off, or you can kind of adjust
the layer density. So it almost looks like a watermark.
Yeah. So I highly recommend Photoshop Elements. I've tried a few others, and honestly, I think this one is the best. I believe it's free. I don't think you even need the Adobe account for this one.
Oh, that's excellent.
It's quick. It's easy. You can do multiple layers. So you can also do your text layers in there if you wanted to do text. So it becomes really interesting.
So you Snapseed it to edit it, and then do the like add in the logo and the layers, text or whatever you would do with... Yeah. Photoshop or Elements.
Yeah, and because I do a lot of them, my idea is ease, right? So I don't want to spend hours and hours and hours, because it sounds like it's going to take a lot of time. It really doesn't. I can get... what I've done in Photoshop Elements is created a blank template with just my logo.
Oh, you just drop
it
in.
And I can move my logo wherever I want, because it's on its own floating layer. So then all I do is drop in the image... adjust the layers. If it comes in on top of the logo, I'll move it behind the logo, and then I can move the logo to where it sits best in the image.
Perfect.
So you can really, you know, templating is the way forward when it comes to this, because it enables you to move quicker.
So if you're a small business owner, you know, between Snapseed and Photoshop Elements, you kind of just walked it through a pretty simple, repetitive process for
photo
creating
editing.
strong photo editing. Yeah, and then
posts.
Yep. Okay.
You can use all your, you can do your type in there and everything. If you want to help and you're struggling to kind of come up with nice typographical lockups, is the word I would use. There's a number of apps out there. I just happen to use Adobe Spark Post. Which is basically a bunch of different templates for social media posts. So when you see these posts that have really nice messages on it, maybe it's a quote from a famous person, it's got this nice image behind it, that's probably done in an app like Adobe Spark Post. It really is neat. It's quick. It's easy. You can create your own template, absolutely, or you can use some of the predetermined templates that they have. You have complete control over it. You can adjust the fonts. What font you want, if you want something more cursive versus more traditional.
Oh, I gotcha.
So there's a lot you
Spark
can do.
Post, I have to check that
and
out.
I think why don't we do this? On the website in the coming weeks, we'll put together I'll try to do a video tutorial of how to use these apps and show you some examples of what we've discussed on the show today that maybe you can use in your own social media applications.
How about for the small business owners that don't feel comfortable doing it on their phone? What do you like on the desktop?
Adobe.
Okay. What if you can't use Adobe? Are you? How do you feel about? I always liked Canva and Get Stencil in my book are pretty interchangeable. They obviously both have their own, you know, strong points and weaker sides, but I think both really. I mean. To the ease of doing it, if you're, you know, much more comfortable on your desktop, you just don't like doing it on your phone. And I think both of them are great options to...
Absolutely. So I'm fortunate enough that I have to use Adobe in what I do for my job, right? So,
but there's such a learning curve.
It's a learning curve. It doesn't come cheap. So my best recommendations, I love Canva personally. Okay. I've used that a lot. I think that has some great applications. The Adobe Spark... which is outside of the Adobe suite. I can't remember if it's free or not, but they also have a web-based version. So it's not just an app. So you can still use that too.
Okay.
But I would say, you know, again, a lot of these I've seen and done different things with, but I would say Canva for me is number one. And then I would probably look at Spark Post from Adobe just to look at their web version. There are a bunch of others, and we'll have to put some links on.
I agree. The Get Stencil I had for...
I haven't used that one.
It was interesting. It's more made for social media images, I feel, than Canva's really kind of broadened and gone with, like, you know, print and all.
Yeah.
But the big thing with the Get Stencil was kind of as the stencil, you know, naming, their goal was, like, you could be, like, create an optimized image across multiple platforms, kind of like with clicking buttons and a few minor adjustments.
Which is, and again, Spark Post does the same thing. And that actually saves a hell of a lot of time.
Yes.
So if you are running multiple channels and you want to use this image across all of them, this is you know, those two tools are fantastic to do that. I think if you're doing more your print-based stuff and or using some big hero shots on your website, you want to use more of your photo editing kind of software, and that's where Canva comes in a little bit more.
It does, and for those not familiar with Canva, you can use both. It offers you the option to purchase professional images, for $1 each, which is really nice.
Low royalty free, or use your own images, or they have a selection of free images that you don't pay for. So you can use those. Adobe also offers Adobe Photos, which is the same thing. They're fairly cost effective. You buy credits and Shutterstock, all these sort of big photo libraries, they do it. The danger is there, you have access to millions of photos, but so does everyone else.
Correct, yeah.
And that's not always a bad thing. If you can't get a shot of the subject matter you want, maybe it's a yoga pose, right? Mm-hmm. I had this conversation with my wife the other day. Yoga poses have to be done a certain way, and people will look at the detail.
Yeah.
So if you find a stock photo that the yoga pose is slightly off, I would rather get a shot of someone getting it bang on. So, I'd pay that little bit more for it, or I'd get it done myself.
Yep.
The irony is, you can then, if the photo is good enough, you can then sell it back to the stock libraries.
Oh, once you retouch,
and start to get some very low kind of reward income coming in from your photography efforts too.
No, that's excellent. This is really a great discussion on photos. We're going to put up the photos of me on the website, and Wayne's going to show kind of the difference in thirds. And you know what? That's about all the time we have for today. Next week, we're going to get into promoting your blog. So we've touched on creating content last week. This week was a focus really on the images for Round Blogs. Yep. And next week, we're going to talk how to get your blog out there, how to get it generating you money. So for Kevin O'Brien.
And for me, it's from him and from me. It's been a great show, and we look forward to hearing from you all next week.
Sounds good. See you.